This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst Red Raider!
Puts up the 10, puts it up the right sideline!
Yeah, he's got to go, he's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Welcome, everyone, to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, here in studio with producer Malpal. Mallory, how are you?
Doing well. Glad to be here, as always.
Yeah, and Mike Craven. Mike, what is up, buddy?
As little as possible.
Yeah, you know? Great, right?
Kind of like in hibernation, like a mixture between like bored and like I don't know what to do with my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know? So
we'll see. This weekend was the first weekend in a while where you just got to sit and watch games.
Yeah, I got back from Longview Coaching Clinic or the Piney Woods Coaching Clinic like Saturday at like noon.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, games at 3:30. I got to watch six straight football games without writing a single word.
That's nice.
I saw you post your Fortune House meal.
Yep. Yep.
I saw those dumplings.
I got like $40 worth of dumplings and ate them for like four straight meals. Like, it was like lunch and dinner on two consecutive days.
I saw those dumplings.
Complete bachelor life.
I was like, that dude made a Fortune House run.
Oh, man. A complete. And I like had it planned too. I told my mom the day before, you know, she's like, what are you doing this weekend? It's like, I'm ordering a bunch of Fortune House dumplings and watching NFL football games and probably losing some money gambling on them. Those are the things that are happening.
So, it's really nice to have everybody in studio, though. It feels like a little bit more normal, you know, and besides the football season, and we were all in different places and had to zoom in or had to call Craven and then it sounded weird. And it's just really nice to have everybody back in studio.
Oh, yeah. No, seriously. What was I gonna say? Oh, yeah. If you're in Irving or around the Irving area, you should know a Fortune House. They're not sponsoring this, but they have our endorsement 100%. That is some of the best dumplings I've ever had. If you're in the Irving area, you know, I guess it's more Las Colinas area. But still, if you're around the area, come on now. Make a trip down to Fortune House because they will get my money any day.
DM me. I'll go with you.
Craven's been here for like not even half a year. Not even like, how many months have you been?
Three months. Right.
And he's eaten there already more than I have.
I don't eat out much. I'm cheap.
Right,
so
right,
I mean,
sure.
But when you're by yourself, like what, I'm not going to go spend $12 on dinner or whatever.
Right.
I've eaten out, I think, seven times.
Yeah.
And four of them have been at Fortune House.
Hey, if you like it, you like it.
I can make chicken.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how to make dumplings.
Right, exactly. 100%. It is excellent. So, if they want to sponsor us, that'd be great.
Hey, on this podcast, we're all North Texas Honda dealers now.
Oh, we can't
forget
North Texas
that. Well, I guess that's true. You can drive somewhere to go eat with North Texas.
Yeah, I'll take my Honda,
CRV
dealers up to Fortune House.
Let's go. Let's
there
go.
You go. It all comes full
circle.
I'm okay
with that. So we've talked about in the last episode, or the previous episodes, where, you know, this is the off season, not much is going on, especially until spring camp starts. And until then, and really until signing day too, like every coach is on the road trying to hit the road hard for signing day to close big in February. So we're kind of in a limbo area. And so we were thinking, it was like, okay, we could do like postmortems of every team. You know, Craven's kind of doing that in article form already. We're kind of doing that on TFT. Okay, well, what's something else we can do? I think Craven just said, what if we just got a bunch, see who we can get for interviews. And I was like,
it's that simple.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Let's see. And we can gear an episode around that. And so, as you probably know from the podcast title, we got Sonny Dykes, which is huge. We got the TCU head coach. We can start there.
Still feels weird saying that.
It feels weird that our first guest for our podcast will be the TCU head coach. Mike Craven sat down with him. You'll hear it in a little bit. It already kind of shows a difference in the environment at TCU.
I don't know. There's not many ways. Sonny Dykes to Rhett Lashley isn't all that different personality-wise.
Right.
You know, maybe Matt Wells to Joey McGuire is a pretty big personality change, but just like, and this is not good or bad.
Right.
But like the personality change from Gary Patterson to Sonny Dykes is just different.
It's just
absolutely different. I mean, Sonny Dykes is at a basketball game the other day telling students that they can just come to practice.
Right.
It's just open.
That's wild.
You know, and like that's absurd in modern day football. Like you just don't, you know, Lincoln Riley got mad at the student newspaper for being on top of a roof.
Right.
And so like it's kind of become this like state secret, you know, football is very insular and you're very paranoid. And I think it's cool that Sonny's kind of walked into a place that's known as insular as any program in the state and basically opened it up for business. If you want to come over here and do a story on us, do it, you know, and I think that's smart. When you're in modern football with recruiting and the portal and just how much just kind of the outside perception of your program matters, to kind of come in there and open it up and allow people to come in there and do what they want and enjoy it and be around it, I think is going to help TCU kind of build some momentum that maybe they haven't had the last few years.
Yeah, and especially I think when, you know, the Sonny Dykes hire was kind of a mixed bag, I think, when it came to TCU fans. I think it was like, you know, maybe they thought maybe they could aim a little higher. Maybe it was a little, I don't know, some people loved maybe taking the SMU head coach and somebody who was a proven commodity. But I think this is a way to get kind of everybody on your side, right, where it's like, okay, well, let me show, like, if you're not sold yet, fair enough. Let me just show you, right? Here's things that are different, right? Here, let me, first he hires a pretty good staff, very good recruiting staff, but then he starts to do things like that where, okay, we're going to have the fans more involved. I'm going to be more public facing. Like he is, and again, that's something Gary Patterson built over time, is like the ability to not have to be public facing because he was winning and so successful. But Sonny, Sonny Dykes knowing the environment he walked into, where it was like, okay, I know the perception of this program. I know the perception of maybe this hire not being the dynamite hire everybody wanted, but here's some things that are going to be different around here. And I'm doing what I can right now to change your perception and change your opinion of me and this program. And yeah, I mean, it's wild how, you know, we thought of some names and we're just like, Sonny would do this, right? And so, like, sure enough, and it's weird to be like, yeah, the TCU coach would do this. And so,
I mean, he spoke to me directly after the early signing period press conference to do the one-on-one with the story thing, and then now this with the podcast deal. So yeah, I mean, you can tell, and I think some of it's when he talks about this in the interview a little bit. You know, he kind of came up around some like cavalier coaches.
Yes, yes.
You know, his dad was kind of known as a trailblazer and is kind of a different, you know, not so as old school as maybe some of the other coaches. You know, he would try different things.
You asked about Mike Leach.
Those are the guys that kind of like helped him kind of get going in this industry. And, you know, he was a baseball player. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with the offense that they run, it doesn't matter if you know what play. I mean, they're running the same 10 concepts and stuff like that. And so I think for him, he knows like keeping it behind the scenes isn't helping him at all.
Yeah.
Getting it out in front, getting students involved, getting alumni involved, getting the city of Fort Worth involved, that's going to pay off more than having a couple guys there at practice and maybe seeing something that they probably don't even understand anyway. That's what I've always understood about like closing off practices.
It's like, what is
like, yeah, what is that doing?
What does Joe Schmo know about your scheme? And there's like three different options for every wide receiver and every single route. You know, it's so complicated. You can't really figure it out. From what I remember, like Texas used to have open practices.
Yeah.
And you could go and watch like Roy Williams, BJ Johnson, Sloan Thomas go up against like Nathan Vasher, Aaron Ross, all that kind of stuff. And then a guy got hurt. I can't remember the exact story, but a guy got hurt at practice and the parents found out about it on the internet before like Coach Brown could like call them and say like, hey, your son hurt his neck at practice and he's on his way to the hospital or whatever.
Right.
And so that kind of cut it off from there. But then I think once you kind of take stuff away, you never give it back.
Mm-hmm.
You never give that access back. So to start your tenure with this idea of like, students, come out and come watch us and be excited about this program, I think that's just, like you said, it's a very smart way to get everybody on board and kind of going in the same direction.
Yeah. And, you know, this will be the first of a couple interviews. You know, I don't want to put a number on how many we'll get, but one of the things that I think we, and you in particular, wanted to hit on was, you know, we have an entire offseason to talk about quarterback battles. We have an entire offseason to talk about transfers and all this thing. We have a magazine that we're putting out that's going to have all that info in it. You're probably by May, you're not going to want to talk about depth charts at all until August. And so that's not what these interviews are about. These interviews are more about them as people and like their upbringings, their kind of coaching backgrounds. If you've read Craven's features on any of these guys, you know, that's kind of what he's hitting at. It's not necessarily the on-field stuff because, again, we have however many months until August to talk about that. It's something else that you can come to these specific interviews for to be like, oh, that was something different that wasn't on, you know, Split Zone Duo or, you know, whatever else college football podcast you guys listen to. And so that's kind of the aim is for these. And we hope that we can continue to do them. And we hope that it's something that you guys are going to enjoy listening to. Before we get to that, though, there was some news involving a Gary Patterson yesterday.
I like the way you phrased that.
A Gary Patterson.
A Gary Patterson. One Gary Patterson.
The one and only.
He was spotted at the Texas basketball game against Kansas State with Chris Del Conte wearing a Texas shirt. I believe Brian Davis of the Austin American Statesman tried to talk to him, and he put on Twitter basically. It was like, he said, nothing official yet. Fair enough. It's a state, you know, he goes from a private institution to a public institution. There's probably a lot of things he has to clear and all that. But he's more, it's the biggest open secret, yeah. I think, in the state right now, is that he's going to be a consultant in some way or an analyst or something on Steve Sarkisian's staff.
Special assistant to the head coach.
Right. Yes.
Is going to be the title.
Right. Yes. Assistant almost guarantee to the... that. So we are not even 3 months from him departing from TCU. I put on Twitter pretty blatantly, gotta take that statue down.
Yeah.
Y'all got TCU talking 10 years, but 3 months. And I'm also like an advocate of like, they probably shouldn't have given him a statue anyway this soon while he was still coaching, because Gary Patterson's a very vindictive man. And so the argument that I heard was, well, he got fired. What does he owe them? Fair enough. Right. He got fired.
Right.
What does he owe
them? Good point.
My counter to that would be, well, then what does TCU owe him in
that's
response
true.
To that?
Yeah. That's true. I guess that just gets so messy.
Oh, it does.
It just gets messy.
That's the thing. Gary Patterson is a messy man for this.
That's true.
He's throwing the horns up.
Here's how I look at it, right? If you go into like my parents' house, you will see a wedding photo of like one of my cousins, right? And you will see me with the person that I'm no longer with. But you can't just throw all that stuff away,
you can't.
Right?
You can't forget, you know?
You can't, like,
well, don't throw it away.
Every family photo I've ever been in.
But just put it in your back pocket, maybe.
I was about to say, it's like I'm not saying tear, I'm not saying like, you know, like
burn
a regime change, like,
yeah.
You know, like taking the statue
Saddam's
down.
Thing.
Right, yeah, I'm not saying that, like pull the ropes. No, I'm saying like get a little mover, whoop, lift it up. Take it to the shed.
Yeah.
Put a little LaDainian Tomlinson statue in its place for a little bit. And then in 5 years.
When the wound has healed.
Very much not coaching your in-state rival anymore. Then you'd be like, all right, here's the time when Gary Patterson's probably okay to like open up the door back for TCU. Because right now he probably wants to beat them by 40.
Yeah.
Just move the statue. Yeah. like that's for me. Because. I think Parker Stats of War put it on Twitter. It was like, there's a difference between Gary Patterson's tenure didn't end the way it should have versus he's throwing up the horns like down the road like a month later.
Yeah, like if he's singing the eyes of Texas after Texas beats TCU in 2022 or something like that, that's a weird optic situation.
If they beat them in 22, and he's probably leading the band, like singing the eyes of Texas.
Somebody's got to.
So
it did look weird. Yeah. I will say,
it
like when
very
that
weird.
Picture started
with
like
the,
going
yeah,
on
the
Twitter
white,
stuff,
yeah, the white
yeah it was
shirt,
like seeing Gary Patterson. Because in my mind, and I don't know Gary Patterson enough to know if this is true or not, but it felt like beating Texas was. Like a yearly, like that was the goal.
Oh,
that was the mission. There wasn't many
was
things
when
he
they didn't
enjoyed
do it.
More.
Yeah, it was weird that they didn't do it this year.
Right. Like, right. He geared up to beat Texas, and now he's got on Texas gear.
Right.
And so it was like a weird optical kind of like you had to like, oh, is this one of those Photoshops where they just like change shirts of some, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was interesting. It was weird. But I do think it's smart by UT.
Oh, my God.
Who knows more about the Big 12 than Gary Patterson?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you watch Texas last year, specifically on defense, it felt like a coaching staff that wasn't aware of what the Big 12 actually is, that they were coaching the stereotype of the Big 12, two high safeties. They're just going to pass the ball a lot. Well, the best teams in the Big 12 are running the football. This is Oklahoma State and Baylor. This is a running conference nowadays. I think Gary Patterson can come in there and clean some of that up on top of the self-scouting. So I think it's a smart move by Texas, but like you, it's one of those – it's just kind of a weird thing right now. I mean, you got an analyst at UT basically with a statue outside of TCU Stadium. And I mean, that's just – it's an awkward kind of weird deal. And I asked Sonny about this in the interview.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, because he was there as an analyst in 2017 when he got let go by Cal.
Yeah.
And I jokingly was like, so what's it like being in Gary Patterson's office? You know, because yeah. like it's Gary Patterson's office to everybody.
Yeah.
And it has been for 20 years, you know, so like, you know, people have to be like, oh, no, it's in Gary's office back there. You know, like it's
right.
Has
right.
To be
still.
Happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, you know, and that's what happens when breakups after 20 something years happen. There's mm-hmm. going to be some awkwardness and weirdness, specifically when the coach isn't done.
Yeah.
Like Gary Patterson isn't done coaching football.
Right.
And that's going to make things a little interesting and weird over the next 4 or 5 years, no matter how it turns out.
Sure. I think the thing that really cemented it for me was I tried to picture another coach worthy of a statue in the state doing the same thing. Right. Does Mac Brown consult for Tech? You know, does RC Slocum consult? Cause I don't want to go Texas A&M cause that's TCU and Texas aren't like that. Right.
Right.
But like, does RC Slocum consult for Baylor? You know, like I just don't, that's my thing.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody, you know, he's free to do what he wants. And Texas is very, like you said, very damn smart to, and apparently mm-hmm. is in play for a former TCU player that we can probably talk about after the interview as well in the transfer portal. So, but we're not going to talk anymore. We're going to let you guys listen to the interview. We'll come back with some questions, just kind of talk about some light questions about the offseason for TCU. And Mallory, I believe, has some as well. So, without further ado, Mike Craven one-on-one with Sonny Dykes, TCU head coach.
So here with TCU head coach Sonny Dykes. First, coach, I want to walk you through, you know, you're the son of legendary head coach Spike Dykes, obviously. You were born when he was at Alice High School, or Big Spring, I'm sorry, then Alice High School, then he was an assistant at Texas, an assistant at New Mexico, Mississippi State, Midland Lee, and then Texas Tech, and that's before you even graduated high school. So what I would like to know is how much did all of those moves kind of shape your personality and maybe impact your kind of young life?
Yeah, you know, I think quite a bit, actually. I think, you know, my kids are going through some of that right now. I've got a 13-year-old daughter, and her situation is really pretty similar to mine. She was born in Tucson, Arizona, and then moved to Ruston, Louisiana, and then moved to Berkeley, California, and then moved to Fort Worth, and then moved to Dallas, and is now moving back to Fort Worth. And so, you know, I think when you move around as much as she has, or as much as I did, you know, I think it's, you know, you've got to learn how to kind of adjust, and you got to learn how to figure things out on your own. You know, and I think you learn it at a very young age. And so I think in a lot of ways, it's great preparation really for the rest of your life and dealing with things that you have to deal with. And, you know, you kind of, like I said, you kind of got to figure stuff out on your own when you're really young, whether it's, you know, how to get along with people at school or, you know, how to be able to adjust to different cities or, you know, different situations within those cities that you live in. And so, you know, because every place is unique and different and has strengths and weaknesses and all the things that are associated with moving, but it's, you know, it's certainly had an impact on my life. And, you know, I think it's funny, when I got into the business of coaching, one of the things I wanted to do was not move. And so, you know, I was going to go to take a high school job and really just stay there for a long time and try to kind of, you know, sit there and, you know, kind of work my way up. And so that was my intent. And then, of course, I took the exact opposite approach and ended up moving a bunch in my career. But hopefully, you know, we're here to stay. And you know, my intent is for this to be the last move that any of us have to make.
Kind of found a little bit of a home there. I love at Coronado and then attending Texas Tech to play baseball. Like you said, we've talked before, and you said your goal was just to become a high school coach. You had mentioned kind of South Lake Carroll maybe being a potential landing spot for you. This is one of my all-time favorite stories. So do you mind kind of walking us through kind of why you ended up at Navarro Junior College instead?
Yeah, it's funny because I'd been a year at Richardson Pierce and was teaching 5 sophomore English classes. And so I was spending a lot more time, you know, teaching Romeo and Juliet than I was coaching football. And so that was, you know, I really enjoyed the classroom part of it, but, you know, 5 classes a day with 30 kids in every class, that was a lot of time devoted to teaching and not as much devoted to football. And so, you know, at that point, I was going to go to Southlake, and I went over and watched Navarro practice. A guy named Larry Keck had gotten hired as the offensive coordinator, and, you know, Larry was a real innovative coach and had been the offensive coordinator the year before at Ole Miss, and they'd thrown for a bunch of yards, and he was kind of a run-and-shoot guy, and I was interested in learning, you know, the run-and-shoot, some of the intricacies of the passing game and all that. So long story short, I go out to Navarro, I watch him practice, and end up, you know, meeting with the head coach, whose name was Keith Thomas at the time. And, you know, and Keith sat me down and we started talking about what the job entailed and, you know, how much it paid and all this. And, you know, he told me, he said, hey, look, it's a 10-month contract. You got, you know, you're going to live in the dorm for free and get all your meals paid for, and we'll pay you $4,000. And so, you know, I immediately said, well, okay, you know, $4,000 times 10, it's $40,000. And you know what? That's not bad, especially when I'm getting my meals paid for and living for free in the dorm. Well, turns out it was $4,000 a year, not a month. So I got my first paycheck and it was $288. And I was a little shocked. You know, once that happened, my car payment was $250. So I had, you know, $38 left over for the rest of the month. But that's kind of how I ended up at Navarro. Had a great experience, really learned how to coach football there. And, you know, the great thing about junior college is you get to recruit guys and, you know, people come recruit your school as well. So you have an opportunity to watch and learn, you know, how to do it and how not to do it. So it was a really good experience for me from that perspective, but it was kind of a funny story. And I was in such demand, I stayed 2 years.
I know $36,000 can mean different amounts at different times in your life, but I'd imagine at that time that 36 grand was everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, having $38 left over at the beginning of every month ain't exactly what I was planning for. You know what I mean? I thought I might have a little bit more than that. So, but it's just kind of the way it is sometimes in coaching. And, you know, it's funny, people talk all the time about, you know, how much money coaches make, and every single coach I've ever dealt with has a similar type story. I mean, yeah. You don't get in this profession to make money. You know, there's you get in it because you love the game and you love young people, and, you know, you hope someday you can make something, at least be able to pay the bills. And, you know, that's really why you get in.
You end up in 1997 becoming a graduate assistant at Kentucky. Hal Mumme's the head coach there. Can you describe or even put into words kind of his impact on not only you, but just college football or football in general and the way it's played now?
Yeah, I mean, look, that was obviously the move for me, you know, in my career, was to go work for Hal. And I was, you know, Mike Leach's graduate assistant in 97 and, you know, worked directly with Mike. I learned a lot about, you know, about the game of football. And obviously the, you know, the air raid was Hal's baby. And so we had a, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, it really was. I mean, it's hard to, you know, really put into words what that meant, you know, for my career and really what that did to college football. I mean, it changed everything, you know. And I remember I took the job and, you know, got there and we were started a game plan a little bit in the summer, and just watching, you know, how he did things and his approach and, you know, the way everything was organized. It was really, really interesting. And, you know, it was really made sense. You know, it was very simple. You know, Hal was a big believer in execution over scheme. You know, I think somehow people think air raid is more of a scheme, and it's really a more of a way of thinking about, you know, your style of offense and how you're going to play. It's really a school of thought, probably, as much as it is anything else. And so, you know, it was a really, really cool experience for us and for me. And, you know, I got to be part of, I think, changing not only college football, but the way the game's played at every single level. You know, we went there in 97 and started throwing the ball around in the Southeastern Conference and had some success. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to catch on with Mike at, Texas Tech in 2000 and kind of be part of that whole thing that took place there. you know, just the, you know, going into the Big 12 and the way that that league changed and all the stuff that he did, you know, at Texas Tech was pretty special as well. So really blessed and fortunate to work with those guys and just how creative they were and how innovative they were. It really taught me a lot about the game of football and, you know, as I said, about how important players are and not plays and, you know, the importance of being able to execute in terms of, you know, instead of, you know, having 100 different calls, we were just real simple and we were really good at what we did and it allowed us to move the football and score some points.
You know, you mentioned it, you moved to Texas Tech with Mike Leach. That 2003 kind of coaching staff and team, like, I feel like it's going to be like those Iowa, you know, like the team photo for Iowa back in the day where it had like all the tree limbs, you know, from it. Like Art Briles was the running back coach, Dana Holgerson, outside wide receiver, Lincoln Riley, Dave Aranda, Bill Bedenbaugh, GAs, Cliff Kingsbury, Graham Harrell, Sonny Cumbie, quarterbacks on that roster. I mean, I guess when you're in that moment and you're around all of those type of guys with all these like offensive minds and stuff like that, how much of the competition was like inside of that room as much as it was outside of the room?
That's a good question. You know, there was obviously a lot of bright people there. You know, and the great thing about Mike was he kind of knew what he wanted to do, but he always was open to having a debate really about anything. And so, you know, whether the sky was blue or, you know, what do we need to add or what do we need to subtract from our offense? And so it was, we had some very lively conversations through the years, just about everything, you know, from practice organization to, you know, recruiting, to managing players, to the, you know, to obviously the scheme and the thing and how we did things and why we did things. And, you know, the thing I always really admired about Mike was he was never afraid to try something different. You know what I mean? I mean, he was fearless. It didn't matter what people thought. You know, he believed, you know, he thought, look, if this is going to work, we're going to do it. I don't care what anybody else thinks. And so a lot of the stuff that's starting to happen now, you know, Mike was doing it 20 years ago, you know. Yeah. We were doing a lot of the analytics stuff before it was called analytics. You know, it was at that time it was kind of a gut feeling. You know, we were going for it early in ball games on 4th and 1, you know, in our own 30-yard line. And at the time, nobody else in college football was doing that. And now you see a lot of people doing it, and you see it on Sundays in the NFL now. And as I said, that was 20 years ago. And so Mike was really forward thinking in his approach and the way he approached the game, and it really began at that spot that I described earlier, the spot of not being afraid. You know, he didn't care what anybody said about him. He didn't care about what people thought. He didn't care about, you know, the typical conventions of college football. He was trying to find a better way to build a mousetrap. And so because of that, you know, we had a lot of conversations, and, you know, there was a lot of talk and, you know, really interesting perspectives on things. And so it was a fun place to be a young football coach. And I think we all learned an awful lot from our experience there and our time there.
You know, I've never thought about this, but it dawns on me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but your dad always seemed to me to be an old school defensive coach. Like, he was the DC at Tech before he was the head coach. What did he kind of think about this new school of offense that you were attaching yourself to? Kind of what were his initial thoughts of, like, of just the offensive philosophy and some of the things that y'all were doing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My dad was kind of forward thinking too on a lot of stuff. You know, he kind of fit that old school mentality in a lot of ways. I think just, you know, his approach to the game in some ways, you know, he was kind of a defensive coach, as you said earlier. But he was pretty creative and pretty innovative. And so he recognized it early. I can remember, you know, when he was still coaching at Texas Tech, he would watch some of our games in Kentucky. He'd be like, how in the world are you guys doing this? I don't really understand it, but I know this, you're beating people that you shouldn't be beating. And so he recognized it. And, you know, when I became a head coach, I think it drove him crazy sometimes. You know, there were times when, as I said, you know, in 2010, we were going for it on 4th down a lot. And, you know, when I was at Louisiana Tech, and sometimes I think he thought I was nuts, but I think he did recognize it, and I think he did say, look, there's a place for this in the game. And, you know, he was always open to thinking outside the box as well. And so, as I said, I mean, he understood what we were doing, and he didn't always agree with it, but he understood that it was different and it was unique, and that, you know, it allowed us to be successful at times when we probably shouldn't have been, you know, when we had maybe a talent disadvantage. You know, we could do some things to normalize the playing field a little bit and equalize the playing field. And, you know, I think he recognized that a lot of the things that we did, you know, could pay off.
You go off to Arizona as an OC for a couple of years, and then you get your first head coaching job at La Tech in 2010. I've asked you this before, but I just find this fascinating, like the idea of being a first-year head coach. I mean, you've been around your dad, Hal Mumme, Mike Leach. Like, how prepared are you for that job, and just, like, how different is being a head coach than what you think it is before you get the job?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think you really ever understand exactly everything that it entails, just from the standpoint of, you know, you just have to wear so many different hats as a head coach. You know, and there's so many things that happen to you every single day, and most of them aren't good, and you have to be able to deal with that. I think that's the biggest thing, is that there's just so much that comes at you every day. I mean, you got, you know, 30, 40 people working for you, you know, in the building, between, you know, support staff and training staff and strength and conditioning staff and, you know, just all the people that are here. And then, you know, all of them have issues and problems. And then you've got, you know, 135 players, all of them have issues and problems. And, you know, everybody's going through something. And so as a result, you know, you're responsible for all those people in a strange sort of way. And, you know, and as a result, there's five or six major issues every single day that you have to be able to deal with. And none of the stuff's going to go the way you want it to. And I think as a young coach, sometimes that really can be hard to deal with. And it's hard to kind of rationalize that in some ways. But the older you get and the longer you do it, you just understand that goes with the territory. You just understand every single day you're going to show up and there's going to be four or five things that go bad. And how you deal with those things is going to really honestly determine how successful you are, whether it's, you know, players getting in trouble or recruiting or academic issues or, you know, staff issues or, you know, trying to hire the right people and, you know, just make very important decisions. You know, all those things are just going to, it's not going to go like you want it to. And you have to be able to understand that, move forward, be able to adjust and, you know, and figure out how to, you know, get through the day and try to make sure that at the end of that day, your football program is better than it was at the beginning of the day. Just kind of keep inching forward. Make sure that you don't take any steps backwards. And you know, all those things are hard things to do. And as I said, the biggest thing is just having to deal with issues that you don't ever envision. You know, when I was at Louisiana Tech, we had a player that passed away, had a medical issue and passed away. And, you know, and you don't ever envision, you know, having to tell his parents that that's happened to him. And that's something that I had to do as a head coach. And, you know, there's just things like that that happen to you that you don't ever expect that to happen. And you have to be able to, you know, to get through that.
Now, from La Tech, you go to Cal in 2013. I personally can't imagine places that are much different from each other than Ruston, Louisiana and Cal Berkeley. Just how was that? How was that shift?
Yeah, you know what? It was different. I knew it was going to be different. It ended up being probably a little bit more different than I thought. You know, Cal's a great place. I mean, it's a fantastic school. You know, unbelievable tradition at that school, unbelievable accomplishments at that school. You know, there's just a lot of accomplished, successful people associated with that university. You know, that have done some really remarkable things. So it's a really cool place to be. It's a difficult place to be the head football coach. You know, there's just a lot of potential landmines, you know, that you have to kind of deal with every single day. You know, it's a tough place to go to school. I mean, it's a lot for your players, you know, to get an education. I mean, it's very competitive. It's a very difficult school. You know, your guys have to work really, really hard in the classroom to be successful. You know, we had some recruiting restrictions that you know, were probably a little more difficult to deal with than I thought they would be. You know, that made it tough. But at the same time, it's a beautiful place and a unique place. You know, the thing that makes football in the South so special is just there's just a love and a universal love and appreciation for the game and what it does for young people. And I think in some ways there's a level of skepticism in California, and especially in Northern California, about football and about football coaches and about football players. And I don't really know why. It just seems like it's there. And in some ways that made the job tough, but it was a great place. I learned a lot. I had an incredible experience. I got to do some things and see some things and be a part of some things I never thought I would see or have an opportunity to be a part of. So from that perspective, it was a heck of a move. You know, like as I said, just from an experience standpoint.
And then you come to TCU originally as an offensive analyst there in 2017. I hope you take this question as a joke the way it's intended, but so how weird is it to now be in Gary Patterson's office? You know, like I feel like that's got to, like a lot of people still have to be calling it that at this point.
Yeah, that's definitely strange. I mean, look, you know, obviously, you know, Gary, I get a lot of respect for Gary. You know, Gary is a friend of mine. There's nobody that respects the job that he did here more than I did. I got to see it up close and personal, you know, and you know, that's made it a little bit strange being here just because of that. But at the same time, it's made it exciting to be here just because, you know, he raised the bar for this program. You know, he took over, you know, this program when people, you know, Dennis Francione got it on the tracks, got it headed in the right direction, and Gary continued to elevate it and got it to one of those elite level football programs. And he made it what it is today. I mean, it's an incredible university, an incredible place to work. I mean, fantastic facilities. The buy-in here from, you know, really the chancellor level down is as good as anywhere in the country. You know, we got an outstanding athletic director. We got boosters that are very, very supportive of our program. We got great fans. You know, and the best thing that we have going for us is we got a recruiting base, you know, that allows us to recruit DFW at a high level. And, you know, and if you can recruit DFW at a high level, then you can be a very successful football program. So we have everything that you want to have here. And really, a lot of that exists because of Coach Patterson and the work that he put in and, you know, what he did for this university and for this football program.
And then lastly for me, I mean, obviously you go from SMU to TCU, you know, it's just across town. Those two teams play each other, and they've played each other for, you know, 100 different times now at this point. Just what do you think the emotions will be for you September 24th when, you know, you're coaching a different team in SMU Stadium, you know, and you've been the head coach there for a couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's going to be hard. I think in our profession, as much moving around as you do, you know, places really aren't that big of a deal. It's more about the players, you know, and that's going to be the hard thing for me is, you know, playing against guys that I recruited, that we all recruited, and guys that you invested in, and, you know, that you love them like they're your own kids. And so that to me is the most difficult part of it. You know, from a school standpoint, it's just kind of another school. And again, don't get me wrong, I loved my time at SMU. I mean, I think it was the most fun that I've ever had coaching. I really enjoyed being in Dallas. I enjoyed we created a vision for the program, and it was fun to see it, to put that plan into action and to see it come to fruition. You know, there was just a lot of things there. We got a lot of close friends that were there. It's just a fantastic place to live. Our kids, you know, had a great experience. My wife, Kate, really liked our time there. But at the same time, you know, it was kind of we were ready for a new challenge. We were ready for something a little bit different. We were kind of ready to take that next step and, you know, and coach at the highest level against the best competition. And you know, and we wanted to do it in Dallas, Fort Worth, which is an area that we love. We wanted to make sure that we had a chance to stay in Texas. And,
have access to all the players that we have access to in DFW. And, you know, that part was so important to us. And it was just one of those opportunities that came along that was too good to pass up. But, yeah, look, it's going to be hard, you know, coaching against the players. Again, just because those are guys that, you know, that you love. You love them like they're your own kids. I mean, you know, you sold them on a vision, and they bought into it, and they listened, and they did everything you asked them to do. And so that part will be difficult. And but at the same time, you know, I'll have a job to do, and I'll be focused on my team, and, you know, and hopefully we'll go, you know, play our best football.
Coach, I really appreciate the time and the conversation, sir.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I hope it wasn't too boring, but I appreciate you guys thinking of me and look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, Coach, I really appreciate it.
And we're back. Man, that was cool. I liked it.
It was fun. It was fun. I'm one of those. I'm more interested in people than in football.
Mm.
Like, it's January.
Yeah. Right.
Like, well, there's like 8 months until the football happens. I mean, I guess we have spring in between then and stuff like that. But I don't really care what the linebacker position looks like right now. Because right. With the transfer portal and all that kind of stuff, who knows what it's going to look like come 3 months, you know. But I like to know, like, I enjoy the human pieces, the human interest pieces that sports kind of bring about. And Sonny's lived a crazy life. How many people were raised by one of the most legendary coaches in the state, who grew up in football culture, but then didn't play football.
Right.
And then is now, you know, the head coach at SMU and then TCU. And he just has a pretty fascinating story. And all these coaches do to get to this level, to reach those kind of heights, you have to have kind of lived a pretty interesting life. And that's what I hope we can do with these interviews, is kind of like figure out who they are and how they got there, more so than like, what do you think about your secondary in 2022? Right.
And the other thing is, Sonny hasn't, like, he's obviously watched this team on tape and all this stuff, but he doesn't really know these guys yet. Like, on the field, like, he's like, I don't know, Duggan's a cool guy. Like, that's probably, like, the most interactions he's had with them is not.
And neither do their fans either. Neither do TCU fans. I mean, just me being a fan of a certain team, I want to know about my coach.
Right.
You know, I want to know not just about what this next season's going to look like or a recap of last season. I want to know how they got to where they are today, you know, and in depth.
Guy?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I think the most fascinating thing he told me, because a lot of it I knew.
Yes.
But the most fascinating thing he said to me was about SMU just being another school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I asked him about, you know, to him, it was about the players, and it's going to be hard to coach against the players he recruited to SMU. But it won't be hard to coach against SMU because when you're raised by a football coach who's moved 10 different times, and now you're a head football coach who's had to move 10 different times to get there, they're just schools. Right. You're just playing against a uniform, you know, and you can be grateful and happy and love your time there, but you got a job to do.
Well, here's the thing I didn't realize. Like, he's only 52, right? He just turned 52. La Tech, Cal, SMU, TCU, 4 head coaching jobs by the age of 52. That's a lot of jumping around for that young. And, like, again, the Cal thing didn't work out, and that could be like a career killer for a lot of coaches, right? But he bounced back really quickly. But that's 4 pretty good gigs. Like, those aren't like, you know, small fishes, right? Those are really brand names. And so I never realized how young he really was to have that resume already.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, coming up, his last name helps.
Yes, of course.
Get him in the door.
Sure.
And then you're kind of on the front foot of that air raid. You know, like we talk about Mike Leach and other guys a lot more than we do about Sonny Dykes in terms of his offensive, like, acumen and stuff like that. But he's been around the most influential offensive minds in college football, maybe arguably just like football in general, over the last 20, 30 years, at least in this century.
Sure.
And so I think that got him in the door first. And if you look at it individually, like, if you're at La Tech and you start having success, Cal comes calling, you're going to take that job.
Sure.
You get fired from Cal because it doesn't work out. He talked a little bit about kind of the frustrations of being a football coach at Cal.
Mm-hmm.
Then SMU comes around, and so you take that job, right? Why wouldn't you take that job?
Right.
And then SMU gets left out of the conference realignment stuff to where now you have an opportunity to go coach the Big 12 at a place you've been and know some people and kind of understand what it's like there in a city that's just next to where you're living now. Mm-hmm. Like, it all makes sense, right? He's not just jumping to jump.
Right, right, exactly.
If you look at it individually, I think, you know, they're all jumps that make sense, or moves that have made sense. And I do feel like this one could be a job he's at for a while.
100%.
If everything goes well,
yes.
Right? If everything goes as planned, I think it's somewhere he can be there for a decade or so. And that's what TCU wants. They mm-hmm. wanted somebody after Gary Patterson that could come in and also give them some stability.
Yes. Well, like if SMU got to the Big 12, probably could have been there.
Right.
For a
yeah.
while. Like, you know, he, like you mentioned, he is not, it's not like a, you know, he's kind of in the news now. He's not like a Todd Graham where he's going to leave after a year, right? And like, you know, try to get, you know, kind of what's a careerist move, right? It's not, that's not him. He's definitely like looking for avenues to have successful programs. And when SMU got left out, it became like, all right, there's kind of a ceiling here. So I definitely do think he is that type of coach where if it works out, he's there for double digit years. Yep. And you know, if he could retire there, I think would be his preference. Obviously, I don't think any coach, very few coaches take a job thinking, well, I'm going to leave in 2 years. You know, like a lot of people are like, I hope to retire here. Like if we strike gold here, you know, I'm set. So.
Right. I mean, I feel like that's your kind of goal as a sure. head coach is to make it to that Power Five level and be a head coach.
And be,
you
know, to be a Gary Patterson.
Be comfortable.
To be
yes.
it, right. To be a legend there yeah. and to make a difference in the long term. So.
So do we, Mallory, do we have some questions?
Yeah, we'll dig more into, I guess, technical football now.
Sure.
Yeah. So our first question we have, you know, with Max Duggan coming back for another season, will mm-hmm. Sonny Dex go with him as the starter, or is he going to be more fluid in that position, maybe going with a Chandler Morris or even a transfer?
You know, a thing that is true throughout Sonny Dykes' career is that he can find quarterbacks in the transfer portal. I mean, even back in his Arizona days, they got Nick Foles through the transfer portal.
I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. And then Shane Buechele, obviously, at SMU. And then Tanner Mordecai last year at SMU. So I don't know if the starting quarterback is on the roster. I think Max Duggan mm-hmm. is pretty good. He started sure. 29 of the last 32 games at TCU. I don't – it's hard to know how much of that – the struggles in the passing offense were about kind of the handcuffs placed on the offense by Gary Patterson and just mm-hmm. his style of play. He's not, he didn't want to be a guy that threw the ball 40, 50 times a game. Sure. Right? He's a defensive guy who doesn't really believe in that style of offense as much. So does Sonny Dykes see Max Duggan this spring and go, oh, wow, we can throw the ball 40, 50 times with this guy if we need to. He can put up big numbers. Or does that offense lend itself more to a Chandler Morris? Or is there a name out there that we just don't know yet where the transfer portal comes into play? And I think that's what makes projecting these teams into 2022 so hard mm-hmm. is at the early signing day press conference, Sonny Dykes said he's planning on getting 20, 30 guys
yeah.
through the portal that are new. And so what this roster looks like right now may not be what this roster looks like in July. I have a hard time believing Max Duggan isn't the starting quarterback in 2022, though.
Same.
Yeah.
I think looking at the – especially I'm looking at the names now for the transfer portal, I don't see many names that I would take over him. Because, you know, the big names are obviously off the board. They were obviously – I think Quinn Ewers took a visit there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, Jackson Dart's not going to TCU.
Yeah.
You know, I don't – Keaton Slovis already committed. So, like, you know, I'm looking down the names and I'm like, I don't know the names that are available. I would for sure take over Max Duggan or even taking a shot on Chandler Morris. And so maybe they add somebody for depth, but as far as like competing for the starting job, I can't say that. I think it is one of those two, and I think it does lean Max Duggan because, you know, yeah, I think the system thing is a good idea, is a good point where it's like maybe Sonny Dykes sees him. He's like, oh, yeah, no, that dude can play. Just put him in my system. Like, mm-hmm. you know, just put the right guys around him.
Because he did that with Buechele and Mordecai.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's taking – it's not like Mordecai was this guaranteed –
Well, it wasn't – it's not even like Buechele was this guaranteed. Yeah. Buechele looked like – to me, it looked like he hit a ceiling at Texas at times, right? That's why Sam overtook him, where it was like, offense just works with Sam. Is Shane Buechele really that good? And it was like, oh, no, it was just the fit. Like, he didn't fit Tom Herman, so he went over here. So, I agree. I think it is just he could see – And I think Chandler Morris could work too, right? I just think Duggan has the experience over him. But
well, didn't he do that with Mordecai and then that other Highland Park quarterback this past year?
Well, Preston Stone was
Preston
there.
Not Highland Park. Parish Episcopal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Side note, I was surprised. You know what I thought would happen? I thought Preston Stone would transfer to TCU. I think Rhett Lashley keeping Preston Stone inside
SMU that's a huge coup.
is a recruiting win that doesn't get talked about enough because it's not technically a recruiting win, but in today's football, that absolutely was.
Preston Stone was kind of a huge staple of like what that SMU program was doing at the time. Was like, we can keep a guy here, an elite recruit, and beat other big-time programs and make him say, no, I'm good here. So, But yeah, no, that's a good point. I'm surprised that they probably tried to make a run at Preston Stone, mm-hmm. but the fact that he stayed is pretty massive.
Yeah. Up next, we got to talk about two of the post players on their roster. Yeah. Running back Zach Evans, who's already transferred to Ole Miss, and then defensive end O'Shawn Mathis, who's entered the portal but hasn't been picked up yet or hasn't made any decisions. How much of a toll is this going to take on the team as a whole, and really how big of a deal is this?
I think it's a pretty big deal. When you lose a guy who averages 7 yards a carry and is, there's probably not an argument to be made. He's the best. He was the best player on that roster.
Absolutely. Right?
We're just talking. I mean, Quentin Johnston's really good. But, you know, Zach's going to be an NFL first, second round draft pick if he stays healthy at Ole Miss. I think it's a big deal, especially because when we talk about the air raid, we forget that, I mean, Sonny Dykes will run the football.
Yes,
and they ran for 350. Uh-huh. They ran over 350 yards against TCU in that win this year. Whatever, they will run the football. So I think Zach would have fit in really well with that offense. They have some guys on the roster with DeMarcata and Miller who can run and who played well when Zach wasn't in last year. So I think they're going to be okay. I'm one of those guys that doesn't really view running back as this glory position anymore. You just kind of get guys, you put them in there, and it's more about scheme than individual skill. Your offensive line will dictate how good you are at running the football more so than your running back will, in my opinion. So I think it's something that can be overcome. It's not the same as losing your quarterback or even losing, your starting middle linebacker or a corner or a defensive end. I think Mathis may be the bigger loss for this team, even though he's not as good of a player.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I hinted at it earlier. I mean, a lot of wind is blowing O'Shawn Mathis to Texas. Especially if that Gary Patterson news comes through, it would not be surprising if he says, yeah, we need help on the O-line. Let me just bring this guy with me. I believe 247 has him crystal balled 100% to Texas so far.
Do you know how many sacks the leading sack getter got at Texas last year?
Two
and a half.
Oh my goodness.
Ben Sims, a transfer. It's bad.
Yeah.
Right? So Mathis would come in and really help Texas right away.
How many did he have this season?
Mathis?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good question. I did not see.
More than 2.5.
Yeah. I was going to say, probably more than 2.5. So he's going to fit the job pretty well.
Four.
Yeah.
Four, okay.
Yeah. Four okay. and 20. Let me see.
45
seven tackles for loss.
Seven tackles for loss. Nice. Yeah. Four sacks.
So, he'd be a huge.
Sure.
He'd be a huge.
And that was a disappointing year.
I was about to say, he was one of those guys where you're looking at, like, oh, that's all Big 12. Like, this is his all Big 12 year and kind of his year to kind of be that next edge rusher for TCU. I don't blame the lapse in defensive line on him just because that whole unit was just so bad this year.
Right.
But I will say losing O'Shawn Mathis does not help. Let me first of all say that. But it's also not hard to get better than where they were last year. They were really bad. I think the hire of, I'm trying to find, Joe Gillespie at defensive coordinator, his Tulsa defensive lines, not last year but in 2020, were actually very good. I had some numbers up on them if I can find them. So his defensive line basically rated, I was on Football Outsiders and they have like a good defensive line metric, and they were basically like top 20 to top 30 in like standard down sack rate, passing down sack rate, and like they got to the quarterback with that defensive front. And I think, I'm not saying he's going to fix it overnight, but I think he made a smart hire in getting somebody who can kind of scheme to work with a defensive line with that had a lot of issues last year in terms of stopping the run, getting to the quarterback. They didn't do really either last year. So, again, losing O'Shawn Mathis does not help that. Let me make that clear. Mm-hmm. But I think as a unit, it would not shock me if they're a little bit better than where they were.
Yeah. Well, we'll close it out with this. What are some realistic expectations for TCU in 2022?
I mean, I think Ish just hit on it. I'm more curious about the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball. Maybe this is just me kind of giving Sonny a little too much. I just assume the offense is going to be fine.
I mean, like, even at Cal, like, he got fired from Cal, and the offense was great.
Yeah, the offense. Sonny Dykes knows offense. Right. He's got talent there. You know, Tay Barber, Quentin Johnston, you know, we talked about the running back situation. Quarterback solid. Offensive line was okay. So, I think offensively they're going to be okay. Here are some numbers. TCU allowed 5.8 yards a rush. They allowed 7.4 yards per play. They allowed 34 rushing touchdowns in 12 games. That's almost three a game.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's a lot.
So for me, this is as much about Sonny Dykes as it is, about the recruiting staff, right? Cam Samples, Carrington, and those guys who are known as like talent collectors.
Yes.
Can they add enough pieces on the defensive front seven specifically to stop that, because you cannot win. And again, this goes back to what the Big 12 actually is and not what it's perceived to be. The Big 12 is a power running football conference. Mm-hmm. And if you cannot get better at that, Bijan Robinson is going to torch you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Baylor's wide zone is going to torch you. Oklahoma is going to torch you. Like those, you know, Tech is coming. Mm-hmm. They're going to, saw what they did in Mississippi State.
Oklahoma State.
Like Oklahoma State. Those teams are going to crush you if you cannot figure out the front seven. When TCU was good, they were super good up front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to have to change. And the only way to do that, in my opinion, looking at this roster, is to add 15 guys or so on the defensive side of the ball that can come in and not just be, you know, starters, but can give you the depth that's required to play against teams that are going to run the ball 50 times a game.
Yeah, I'm going to shout out Richard Johnson from Split Zone 2, who always hints at it. Every time everybody talks about complex scheme, everybody talks about wide open offenses, all that. It's about blocking and tackling.
Mm-hmm.
It is about blocking and tackling. We just saw a team win a national title.
Comes down to
with
the basics.
Decent quarterback, not an elite.
Yeah.
They had
former walk-on.
Former walk-on. Why did they win? They didn't win. No offense to him. They didn't win because of him.
Right.
They had players that are better at blocking and tackling than anybody in the country. And yeah, I mean, take that to any program in this country. Texas, they couldn't block this year. What they do, they go sign their best offensive line class in forever, right? And they're saying we're gonna try to fix this right away. Just boils down to it. You can have all the scheme you want, but if you can't block, you know, we just talked about Max Duggan. We think he's really talented. You can't block for him. I don't know how much you're gonna show. So, yeah, is that all we got?
That is all I have.
So. Yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed this. We're not going to say who we have next because we don't know really. So
I have a hint.
You have a hint?
Yeah.
You want to drop the hint? Go ahead.
Red Bull.
Oh. Okay. Well, we'll just leave that there because if you know, you know. But Mallory's shaking her head. She does not know. So I'll tell you off.
Yeah, tell me when I push stop recording.
Third Ward.
Huh?
Third Ward.
Third Ward?
Oh my gosh!
Oh no,
Mallory.
We have so much education.
We're gonna have a session with Mallory after this, or this is gonna be ESG playing in the background.
I'm so new at this.
All right, so we will talk to you guys next week with Third Ward and Red Bull. Yeah, I'm into this. So. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe, all that stuff, rate, review. Tell Mallory about Third Ward and Red Bull.
You can tweet at me
Twitter,
if you want.
Yes, because she doesn't know clearly. We'll talk to you guys next week.